The hour of the time may be contacted at HOT, that's H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, in the state of Arizona, 85925. Our phone number is 928-333-2942, and our website is www.hourofthetime.com.
Good evening, folks. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Well, tonight you need to get your pen and notebook and, get ready for some pretty heavy stuff to come your way, because we're going to do it again. We're continuing with our groping around in the darkness. Try and find some light. But before we get started, I need to remind you, we need donations. It's November. I would really like to get all the donations in and get everything paid and get all that stuff out of the way so I don't have to continually be reminding you throughout the month to send in your donations. But we need them. Without your donations, we can't do anything. We can't stay on the air. We can't even live, to tell you the truth. Can't even buy food. So send your donations to HOT, H-O-T-T. And remember, folks, we can only accept blank money orders or cash. If you send me a check, I'm going to tear it up and throw it away. I can't use a check. Can't cash it. Okay? Don't even want to cash it. The only thing we can accept is blank money orders. That means you can get a money order in any amount, just leave it blank, keep the receipt, send us the money order. Our cash, our gold, our silver, coin. Okay? Blank money order, cash, gold, or silver, coin. We need your donations right now. Right now, folks. So please, don't wait. Get them in the mail. Get them to us so we can continue to operate. Send them to HOT, H-O-T-T. P.O. Box 940. That's P.O. Box 940. Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R. That's E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. The most important things are the P.O. Box and the zip code. HOT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940. That's P.O. Box 940. Eager, Arizona, 85925. Get ready, folks. Gonna blow your mind. Tonight, folks, we're going to learn about the alchemical meme and secret societies. The alchemical meme and secret societies. So prepare yourself. At the heart, ladies and gentlemen, of the alchemical mystery, of course, lies a secret. Now, this is no ordinary secret. It is that which they really want us to believe cannot be told. The experience of Gnosis. And they believe... And if you study the occult and the secret societies long enough, you'll understand that they believe that ultimately this inexplicable knowing, the Gnosis, cannot be conferred or taught, only incubated and gestated. Now remember, I told you that all through the process of initiation, the climbing up through the degrees of the different brotherhoods or secret societies, one is never told the interpretation of the symbology of the ceremonies, of the initiatory rites, and the esoteric teachings to be found in their writings. One either gets it or one does not. Those who get it are helped up the ladder by those above them, and those who do not progress. Simply, ladies and gentlemen, they do not progress. And they never learn the ultimate secret, which is what we're looking for, isn't it? Somehow, this Gnosis has been transmitted from generation to generation through thousands of years. If you doubt that, I suggest that you get into the books and get into the history and do the research that I've done, and you'll find that this underground stream of particular knowledge that one only finds in these secret societies and ancient brotherhoods, what some might call the secret college, is unbroken. And once you understand what it is and you're able to grab hold of any portion of that stream, you can follow it forward or backward through time. And we find the same content and experience of Gnosis from the modern Samyama experiments at Maharishi University all the way back to the ancient Egyptians and before. We can find the same content and spontaneous experiences, in fact, from mystics of all eras. The secret at the core of alchemy is an ineffable experience of the real workings of our local cosmological neighborhood. Doubt it not. So how can one incubate and gestate such an experience? The answer may lie in the word transmitted. Modern sociologists, folks, have begun to discuss the concept of memes, our complex idea groups, such as monotheism or democracy, that appear to have the ability to replicate themselves. And memes seem to have other properties as well, such as an unusual psychic component. The spread of spiritualism in the 19th century is a superb example of a viral-like meme outbreak with serious parapsychological implications. A modern version might be the New Age movement. Traces of spiritualism's meme can be found surviving into the New Age 90s with its dolphin channeling and near-death experiences. In fact, if you compare the writings of these two different movements, both occurring in different centuries, you'll find that the ideas and the basic premises are almost exactly the same. The recent film, entitled The Sixth Sense, is deeply influenced by spiritualism's perspective on the afterlife, conveying the meme directly and powerfully to millions of moviegoers. It helps, folks, to think of the secret at the core of alchemy as a very special and sophisticated variety of meme, like a spore or a seed. The meme has a protective shell that is also attractive to appropriate hosts. And in the case of the alchemy meme, that shell is the seductive allure of transmutation. Transmutation. Look it up. The transformation of base metal into gold. However, even if one absorbs the outer shell of the alchemy meme, there is no guarantee that the inner core is going to blossom and the meme become active. Remember? Far beneath the bitter snow lies a seed that with the sun's love in the spring, etc., etc., etc. The music on this broadcast is never frivolously played, folks. You see, for the core to blossom, a series of shocks or initiations are required, such as a bomb going off at a federal building in Oklahoma City, airplanes crashing into tall twin towers in New York City, killing thousands of people, an atomic bomb dropped upon two cities in Japan. A complete and total economic collapse. The sophistication of the alchemy meme is such that the experience of gnosis at its core can only be stimulated by these shocks, folks. Now, the shocks that I told you about are major shocks, not just to individuals, but to entire cultures, and sometimes to the entire world. There is no doubt whatsoever that the dropping of the atomic bombs on Nagasaki and Hiroshima changed the entire world forever. So to transmit the idea complex, the Gnosis meme through times requires a series of encounters between those in whom the meme is active and those who have merely been exposed to it. And from this need evolves the idea of priesthoods. And then as religious structures degenerated, mystery schools and secret societies. And we can think of these as incubation devices for spiritual memes. Through the millennia, the undigested seed of the alchemy meme was jumbled together with other spiritual memes, creating a seemingly endless series of hybrid spiritual expressions masquerading as alchemy. Pay close attention to that word, masquerading. However, from its first independent appearance in first century Alexandria to its modern expressions such as Fulcanelli and the Golden Dawn, the secret at the core of the alchemy meme can be traced by its Gnostic ineffableness. The secret protects itself, but in doing so leaves an unmistakable fingerprint. And by following these Gnostic fingerprints, people like me can track the progress of the alchemy meme throughout the history of the human race. In the late 1880s, Dr. W. N. Westcott, the medical examiner for the City of London, was, it just happens by chance, an advanced Rosicrucian adept. A Rosicrucian is a member of the ancient order of Rose and Cross. And he was one of the founders of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, 19th century England's most notable occult organization. He tells us in an 1890 lecture on alchemy that it is never taught in so many words. It may dawn on any one of you. The magic event may occur when least expected, just like I've always told you. Thereby demonstrating that he, Dr. W. N. Westcott, at least understood that there was a Gnostic secret at the core of alchemy. Now, he could be taken as an authority. He was steeped in Rosicrucian ideas and in helping to found the Golden Dawn, which was the first semi-public, gender-neutral, magical society that accepted both men and women as initiates. He clearly felt he was part of some larger pattern or process, and you'll find that all of these adepts always have that sense of belonging to something larger, always at work. And they are. But they're also known throughout history as the builders. The builders. Always working toward the completion of the great work. Their tools don't make any noise, for the most part. In his aptly named flying role, lectures, therefore, of more than passing interest, it was given early in the organization's history and was presented to the group at large. We can think of it as a sort of cozy preaching to the choir type of exposition of the basic Rosicrucian alchemical tradition. But remember, even when speaking to the adepts, they always speak in the esoteric secret language, so that there is no danger ever of the profane, that's you, listening and actually understanding what it is that he or they or any one of them at any time is actually really saying or communicating. The lecture opens with the assertion that alchemy means simply the higher chemistry, which treats with the essential nature of the elements, metals, and minerals. And this is a good direct explanation for the ancient term alchemy, which avoids the pitfalls of speculative philology and other over-esoteric derivations, and it guarantees that you will not understand one word of what it really means. But we will get there. I will make sure that you understand it. It may take quite a few nights of revelatory teaching, but eventually, at least some of you will get it. The next paragraph that he utters plunges us into something very strange. Westcott tells us that the word alchemy was first used by 3rd century Emperor Constantine's court astronomer, Julius Firmicus Maternus. He then quotes a curious passage about skill in alchemy depending upon having the moon in the house of Saturn. Now, most of you are lost right there. You think he's talking about astrology. Not on your life. He's talking about time. He's saying that skill in alchemy depends upon having the moon in the house of Saturn. As if this is not confusing enough, Westcott jumps in to ask, what house does he mean? The day, Aquarius, house, or the night, Capricorn, house of Saturn? And then further confuses everyone by wondering if this 4th century astrologer could have meant the attribution as referring to Uranus. Now remember, in ancient days, astrology was astronomy. But we have to assume that he's wrong, because the planet Uranus was not discovered until 1781, and so Constantine's court astrologer could not have been referring to that planet unless he knew something that nobody else knew up until the time of that discovery. And so we might suspect that this is simply bad scholarship, a case of enthusiasm outrunning erudition. Yet Dr. Westcott's scholarship and other works is sound enough. It is as if the comments are a species of in-joke, not meant to be taken literally, but assumed to be metaphor and allegory by those who know the punchline. And since Dr. Westcott's audience included such luminaries as W.B. Yeats, S.L. McGregor, Mathers, Dr. Thomas Berridge, Annie Horniman, Moyna Mathers, Florence Farr, the Reverend Arthur Eyton, the group's practical alchemist A.E. Waite, and other members of the esoteric London scene, it is likely that a number of these folks did indeed understand the in-joke. Possibly many in the group could answer the good coroner's rhetorical questions, even though the rest of us are left wondering what we missed. Those of you who have studied any part of the history of the occult recognize those names as some of the greatest names in the underground stream during the 19th and early 20th centuries. And so the secret protects itself continually, even from those who think they know it. But it is safe to say, folks, that this strange lecture provides an important cluster of clues and impressions with which to begin the hunt. Most of you would have dismissed it as unintelligible dribble. Big mistake. You see, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn had somehow inherited or rediscovered a part of the Gnostic secret at the heart of the alchemical mystery. Westcott, whatever his propensity for occult in-jokes, shows later in his lecture that he does indeed understand the secret quite clearly. He quotes from an old French description of the sequence of the alchemical process. Here's what he says. The sun begins his special form of change in Leo in his own house. Next, Scorpio follows, and the work reaches completion in Sagittarius. End quote. To make sure that we understand, Westcott insists at the close of his lecture that to perform alchemical processes requires a simultaneous operation on the astral plane with that of the physical. Unless you are adept enough to act by willpower, as well as by heat and moisture, life forces, as well as electricity, there will be no adequate result. End quote. And ladies and gentlemen, not one word of that means what you think you heard. The source for the secret would seem to be the Rosicrucian movements that had swirled around Europe since the early 17th century. The Rosicrucians had become, by the late 19th century, the prototypical secret society for incubating the alchemical meme. I bet some of you are just now getting even a glimmer of what alchemical meme even means. Excuse me. In 1555, 1955 indeed. In 1555, Nostradamus penned a quatrain. Here's what he said. A new sect of philosophers shall rise, despising death, gold, honors, and riches. They shall be near the mountains of Germany. They shall have abundance of others to support and follow them. Well, in 1614, a publicly printed text appeared of an anonymous manuscript that had been circulating among Europe's intelligentsia for several years. It was called The Declaration of the Worthy Order of the Rosy Cross. Known by its first two Latin words, Fama Fraternitatis, it revealed the purported existence of a brotherhood founded by one Christian Rosenkreutz, who apparently, according to the legend, lived in the 14th and 15th centuries. But I'm going to tell you right now, he never lived at all. He is, in fact, a metaphor for something entirely different. In Nostradamus' time, the word philosopher was synonymous with alchemist. Here, with a vengeance, was a new sect of philosophers. The Fama tells us of the search for occult knowledge of a man called Christian Rosenkreutz. He traveled to the Middle East, Palestine, Syria, Egypt, North Africa, and Spain before returning to Germany to found his secret brotherhood. Now that's the story, that's the legend. There's no record of a Christian Rosenkreutz ever having lived, no one who ever knew him or wrote about him, nothing whatsoever. 120 years after Christian Rosenkreutz's death at the advanced age of 106, one of the brethren discovered his tomb and his uncorrupted body. This was the signal for the brotherhood to emerge and spread their message, hence the publication of the Fama. Their message, of course, was nothing less than the dawn of a new golden age. Aha! Now we're getting into some meat here. You've heard me discuss that on many occasions. The announcement of nothing less than the dawn of a new golden age. The Fama informs us that the Brotherhood possessed the keys to a secret knowledge capable, listen very carefully to me, folks, capable of transforming society and ushering in a new era, one in which the world shall awake out of her heavy and drowsy sleep and with an open heart, bareheaded and barefooted, shall merrily and joyfully meet the new arising sun. Remember I told you the secret is sometimes hidden in plain sight? Well, you just heard it. And the quote is taken directly, verbatim, from the next Rosicrucian production, the Confessio Fraternitatis, a Latin restatement of the basic themes, but with a more direct emphasis on its revolutionary implications. It also goes to the very core of the alchemical mystery. And at this point, you've already heard almost everything that you ever need to know, except how it's done. The Rosicrucians were alchemists, but the Fama and the Confessio are both highly critical of the puffer type of alchemical worker who sits in his lab and actually attempts to get the mineral gold out of boiling lead. The Fama talks of ungodly and accursed goal-making, whereby, under the color of it, many runagates and roguish people do use great villainies and cozen and abuse the credit which is given them. The Fama implies that the Rosicrucians could make gold, but found the higher spiritual alchemy to be more important. Has no one can literally make gold out of lead. It discussed a higher spiritual alchemy that related to the coming golden age and how to prepare for it. That clearly was the intent behind the publications of the first two Rosicrucian documents. The third volume, however, was very different. The Alchemical Wedding of Christian Rosencreutz appeared in 1616 and is the only Rosicrucian document to be claimed by its author, Johann Valentin Andrea, a Protestant minister from Germany. Let me say that again, a Protestant minister from Germany. The wedding is full of the occult imagery and surreal metaphors experienced by Christian Rosencreutz as he observes a royal wedding. It represents nothing less than an attempt to express the inexpressible. And after this strange work, the original Rosicrucians fell silent. They fell silent. And it is not known if they did indeed respond to any of the many thinkers who sprang to their defense, for many did, and there were great intellectual discussions all over Europe about the emergence of this secret order. And we must assume that if they did, the secret was kept. Because, ladies and gentlemen, the movement continued and is active today. Although today there are two branches, one which serves to sort of titillate the minds of those just maybe getting started in study of the occult secrets, and another one is a very serious group of builders indeed. Although obscure, it will be seen that Dr. Westcott's lecture serves as proof that Rosicrucian ideas retained their continuity through the centuries. This alone, ladies and gentlemen, is very impressive. But it is the continuity of content that strikes us most strongly. From this continuity of content, we can deduce the outlines of the secret, the meme itself, and use these outlines, these fingerprints, to trace the core of the tradition back through history by following the underground stream. Ladies and gentlemen, if you will go to your video store and either rent or purchase, and if they don't have it, you can order it. Rent or purchase a film called Things to Come. It was made many, many years ago. In that film, you will recognize, if you are an astute student, you will recognize many of the things that I've discussed in our Mystery Babylon series and that I am revealing to you tonight. You will also see a symbol, a globe with wings, a globe with wings. You will also see a war which will remind you of the war raging right now in Afghanistan being fought in exactly the same manner against a backward barbaric people by bombing them from the sky repeatedly until they are overcome. It tells of a new world that will emerge, a golden age. Get that movie. Watch it. Understand that throughout the history of the world, these adepts, these priests, these followers of Horus, the widow's sons, the sons of light, the builders, have worked in the temples without windows to bring about, ultimately over centuries and millennia, their utopian world. And don't doubt it for a moment. If you do, you will demonstrate, to me at least, that you are a fool. The word alchemy as a name for the substance of the mystery is both revealing and concealing of the true initiatory nature of the work, the great work. Al-Kim, A-L-K-H-E-M, is Arabic for the black. It refers to the darkness of the unconsciousness, the most prima of all materia, and to the black land of Egypt. Thus the name reveals the starting point of the process and the place where this science attained its fullest expression and the place where the building is carried on. However, this revelation, important as it is, effectively conceals the nature of the transmutation at the heart of the great work. No matter who you are or where you are listening or what you believe in, what religion you have, what creed you adhere to, what race you are, alchemy has been working upon you personally for many years. And you have been affected by it, whether you recognize it or not. It is a fact. It is true. And it's about time that you began to recognize it so that you can see where it will take you, because it will take you. So let's go back in history, and let's begin in Egypt. For 3,000 years or more, Egypt ruled the known world. In fact, it was the heart of the world. Much of the knowledge that is the underpinning of our own modern culture had its origins in Egypt, believe it or not. Our modern, essentially European view of the ancient world is distorted by the funhouse lenses of Greek and Judaism and Christian history. The Bible gives us an Egypt of powerful pharaohs and pagan magicians, mighty armies, slaves, and invasions of pharaohs, chariots, and armies out of the south. Herodotus gives us a travelogue, complete with inventive stories from his guides. To the Hebrews of the Old Testament, Egypt was the evil of the world from which God had saved them once before. To the barbarian Greeks, it was an ancient culture to be pillaged for ideas and information. The superimposition, ladies and gentlemen, of these concepts produced a skewed image of Egyptian civilization. Most of what you think you understand about ancient Egypt, you don't understand at all. For instance, the pyramids are at least three, the greatest pyramids, what we know as the Great Pyramids on the plains at Giza, were not tombs for any pharaohs. They were temples of initiation. And the initiation that the ancient Egyptians performed was much like the initiation of George Herbert Walker Bush and his son, George W. Bush, in the crypt. Why did you think they called it the crypt? At Yale University. To understand the origin of the vast subject alchemy, we must let go of the funhouse lenses and look clearly at what the remains of the ancient Egyptian culture can tell us. So forget everything you've ever been taught. When we do this, two things immediately jump out at us. One, the ancient Egyptians were the most scientifically advanced culture on the planet up until the present day, if we have indeed caught up with them. And two, their science, in fact, their entire culture seems to be revealed rather than developed. You cannot find a point in Egyptian history where they were learning what they had. They had it from the beginning. Talk about mysteries. The Egyptians claimed that their knowledge was derived from the actions of the divine forces in what they call the first time, or the Zep Tepi. This body of knowledge was passed down through the ages by a group known as the Heru Shimsu, or, as I have taught you on many previous episodes, the body of adepts known as the Company of Horus, or the full body of adepts known as the Congregation of the Mysteries. Remember, Osiris was the doctrine, Isis was the church, and Horus represented the full body of the Congregation of Initiates. Each pharaoh, down to Roman times, was an initiate of the Company of Horus, and so privy to the secret knowledge, and the symbol was, in those days, the emblem of the head of the cobra upon the forehead. Remember, they're also called the Order of the Dragon, the Order of the Snake. The followers of the Luciferian philosophy, some of you call Satan. We can think of this secret knowledge as the core of alchemy. In its broadest sense, however, as we look closer at what the Egyptians tell us about their science, we find that it is based upon an intimate understanding of the stars. We also find that it is coded somehow into many of the ancient monuments that have existed in Egypt for centuries. And if you've listened closely to me on previous broadcasts, I've told you that the sum total of human knowledge was always built into the buildings of the culture of all of the ancient civilizations. These monuments, such as the Sphinx and its temple, point to an even more ancient civilization from which the Egyptians recovered their knowledge. In that sense, the knowledge of the Egyptians, of which alchemy is a half-remembered fragment, is the lost science of the last evolutionary
societal epoch.
But if it's true,
what happened to end this epoch?
The legends say that a great catastrophe destroyed this advanced culture, and modern scientific evidence tends to bear that out. One of the earliest of all alchemical texts is the fragmentary Isis the Prophetess to her son Horus, found in the Codex Marcianus, a medieval collection of Greek fragments. This work seems to be a unique blend of Hebrew mysticism and Egyptian mythology that could only have come from Alexandria. Sometime early in the first century of what is known as the Christian era, the Egyptian goddess Isis tells her son Horus. Remember, Isis was the mother, sister, wife of Osiris. She tells her son Horus that while he was away fighting and defending, or excuse me, and defeating, fighting and defeating the evil one Set, she was in Hermopolis studying angelic magic and alchemy. She relates that after a certain passing of the Kairoi and the necessary movement of the heavenly sphere, it happened that one of the angels who dwelt in the first firmament saw me from above. The angel is inflamed by sexual passion for Isis, but he can't answer her question about alchemy. He bargains on another encounter by offering to bring a higher angel who will tell her everything that she wants to know. The first angel shows Isis the magical sign of the higher angel, and this sign consists of a bowl of shining water and a moon sign that resembles the emblem of the moon god Khonsu of Thebes. And at noon the next day, the angel returns with the higher angel, here called Amnael, A-M-N-A-E-L. And this higher angel also finds Isis desirable and is willing to trade for information. He reveals the mystery of his sign and then swears her to a great oath. In this oath, we find echoes of the great mystery and one of the keys to its explication. And this is the oath. I conjure you in the name of fire, of water, of air, and of the earth. I conjure you in the name of the height of heaven and the depths of earth's underworld. I conjure you in the name of Hermes and Anubis, the howling of Kerkoros and the guardian dragon. I conjure you in the name of the boat and its ferryman, Acherontos. And I conjure you in the name of the three necessities and the whip and the sword. After this strange oath, Isis is told to never reveal the secret to anyone but her son Horus, her closest friend. Now remember, we're not talking about real people here. I told you who these characters really are. The knowledge will make them one, as the knowledge has now made Isis and the angel one. So the church and the congregation will become one. And then a curious thing occurs. When the mystery is revealed, it seems strangely flat, as if something was left unsaid in the answer. Horus is told to watch the peasant, who may or may not have been the mythical boatman Acherontos. He then is given a lecture on, as you sow, so shall you reap. Guess what, folks? This was
several thousand years before the birth of Jesus, who said the same thing. As you sow, so shall you reap. Horus is told to realize that this is the whole creation and the whole process of coming into being, and know that a man is only able to produce a man, and a lion, and a dog, and if something happens contrary to nature, then it is a miracle and cannot continue to exist, because nature enjoys nature, and only nature overcomes nature, period. If you understand what it is that she said, it's not flat at all. It's profound truth. Isis goes on to relate that she will now give Horus the secret of preparing certain sands. She says that one must stay with existing nature and the matter one has in hand in order to prepare things. Just as I said before, wheat creates wheat. A man begets a man, and thus gold will harvest gold. Like produces like. Now I have manifested the mystery to you. And after hearing that, do you really believe that gold can be changed from lead? Do you believe that lead can be changed into gold? Not at all. It cannot happen. Despite what Art Bell and his guests who claims that he's done it and can do it and others have done it, they're full of crap. They're bullshitting you big time. They would love for you to think that that's what alchemy is really all about. Because in the process of doing that, they are engaged in alchemy, and they are affecting your beliefs. They're screwing with your minds. The instruction then passes to hands-on lab work in melting and preparing metals such as quicksilver, which is mercury, copper, lead, and, of course, gold. At the end of this lengthy preparation, Isis exclaims, "Now realize the mystery, my son, the drug, the elixir of the widow." Most people would be sneaking around looking for some kind of a hallucinogenic potion to take. It's a drug of the mind. It's called knowledge of the secret. It holds great power. What are we to make of this strange story? With its curiously flat revelations, well, probably not much at all without the asides that I have conveniently conveyed to you. And if I had not done that, possibly our very earliest alchemical text would present us with the same problems and ambiguities that we will find throughout the entire alchemical corpus. Our body. There seems to be something in the very subject itself that forces its images toward the surreality of pathological metaphor. It is, could be, or is it, merely diseased imagination? Or are there meanings beneath the fantasy? And I tell you absolutely yes, meanings of such profound truth, such absolute power over huge numbers of people and things, that those who understand how it works are constantly awed that it works at all and that it works so well. With this in mind, we can see that the name alchemy points to the lost science of the ancients as revived by the Egyptians, and to the darkness of the unconscious, where powerful psychosexual forces can be encountered and used in the process of transformation. Egyptian science, with its concern for stellar movements as the background for mythical dramas points us another step down the road, as does the realization that there is a core of reality to the process far beyond the purely internal. And as we ravel alchemy's ultimate secret, we will return to the story of Isis and the angel, the origin of alchemy. But first, we need to follow the trail of those who held this information. And since we've already been following that trail for so long on this broadcast, we will, on Monday night, pick it up again. The Hru Shimsu, the followers of the widow's son, the congregation of Horus. Good night, folks. God bless each and every single one of you. Good night, Annie Poon Allison. I love you. Don't forget, folks, we need your donations, and we need them now. HOT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940. That's HOT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925. Once again, HOT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925. Send them in now so that we can continue this. I would hate to have to leave you hanging because we couldn't pay for the airtime.
The hour of the time may be contacted at HOT, that's H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, in the state of Arizona, 85925. Our phone number is 928-333-2942, and our website is www.hourofthetime.com.